Welcome to the Rusty Small Podcast, where the focus is resources for the church and encouragement for the Christian. Let's listen in as Rusty covers today's topic.
Well, one of the most basic questions that a pastor would need to ask and answer when doing church revitalization would be asking and answering the simple question, what is a church? It would seem that we would be able to easily answer the question, what is a church? Because the church has existed for over 2,000 years in virtually every part of the world. Christianity is a global religion, and there have been varied expressions of Christianity and churches throughout 2,000 years. So when we ask the question, what is a church, since the church has existed in history, it would seem on some level that this question would be easily answerable. However, what we discover is that there are many different interpretations of what a church is. For a person like myself who identifies with the wider world of Protestantism, there are some unique things that we bring to the table when we attempt to ask and answer the question, what is a church? It's pretty common for some Protestants to say the church is not a building, it is a body, it is a people. And I agree with that sentiment that the church is not to be associated primarily with the institution of the church. The church exists in a spiritual way or outside of the institution, meaning that the institutional church is not therefore to be exactly identified with the true and pure church. This is actually an idea that Protestants came up with, that the invisible church, this ideal, this group of believers, is not to be identified necessarily with the visible church. And what many Protestants may have forgotten is that the way in which a church is a church is if it has certain marks. For example, the early Protestants would say if a church does not proclaim the gospel, then it is not a church. Even if it is meeting for religious services, if the gospel is not proclaimed, then a church is not a church. And other Protestants stated, well, if the church doesn't have the ordinances, then it's not a church. And so what I want to clarify today is for you to answer the question, what is a church? You have to make a series of informed decisions, hopefully rooted in the scriptures, or at least an attempt to be rooted in the scriptures, to clarify what you mean when you say church. If you're going to say that the church is not a one-to-one correspondence with the institution, that it's conceivable to call yourself a church but actually not possess the marks of a church, and thus you would be no church, since Protestants have embraced that idea, you have a lot of things that you will have to decide on that will radically affect the church that you will attempt to revitalize. What I want to do is just kind of overview some of these. You know, there's a sense that many pastors say, well, we want a church for everybody. And I really appreciate that sentiment. Certainly, we want a church for all people because God loves all people. And that is noble. It is wonderful that that is a person's heart. But the truth is, you'll make a series of decisions on what you think a church is, and all of these decisions will radically affect the type of church that you will revitalize, and on some level will affect the type of church that you will, the type of church you'll produce and the type of people that will be reached. So let's start talking through some of the decisions that you'll have to make. I'm not saying that all of these decisions are on the same level of importance, but you'll have to decide on these issues. Here's the first one you'll have to decide. You have to decide on your denominational affiliation or lack thereof. So I am identify as a Southern Baptist, and you'll have to decide your denominational affiliation. Now, I think it's somewhat in vogue to say, well, I don't want to be part of a denomination. Well, I think denominations, at least the concept, are inevitable if you make any decisions on what type of church you're going to have. For example, if you say we're going to baptize believers only, or if you say, no, we'll baptize babies before they've been able to make a conscious decision to follow Jesus, then you have to do one or the other. You kind of have to say, yes, we will do this, or yes, we will do that. Or how you think about the Lord's Supper, or how you view all manner of issues in the church. So to say that I don't want to embrace the denomination because we want to be a church for everybody, as soon as you meet and gather, you have to make decisions, and you will start to align towards some type of denominational affiliation. So actually, I think that the best strategy, you don't have to agree with me on this, but the best strategy is to embrace a denomination, not to be totally closed off from the good aspects of other aspects of church life and other church denomination and other church movements. Be who you are, be in the stream, be in the tradition, be in the not denomination that you've chosen, but be open to learning from other people. One of the most important things I think you're going to do as a church revitalizer is to make sure that the church's doctrinal statement that they have, you agree with. With all that is happening in mainline denominations where, quite frankly, a bishop or a council or someone is deciding that they want to embrace a different doctrinal statement than the pastor or the church members, you need to be very careful to embrace a doctrinal statement to make sure the church that I am in, am I aligned appropriately with this denomination? And secondarily, do I agree with the denominational, rather the doctrinal statement that this particular denomination affirms? And you really ought to read through that and make sure that you can give a full affirmation of it. Well, let's keep talking about some of the other convictions that you'll have to come to. Not only a denomination, not only a doctrinal statement, but then you'll have to decide on some level of church polity. How's the church organized? And I would propose from a reading of the New Testament that there are two primary roles in the New Testament, the role of pastor and the role of deacon. And you'll kind of have to decide how these roles, these positions, function in the church. There are a lot of different ways in which church polity or church organization can be produced, can be developed. So a few ways that you can organize the office of pastor is you could have like an elder-led, which is a synonym for pastor in the New Testament, at least according to my read, a elder-led or pastor-led church. So that would be a group of elders would be responsible for the oversight of the church. Or you could have a staff-led church where a pastor and a staff would lead the church. Or you could have a solo pastor or a senior pastor-led church, like one person, one pastor is responsible for the overall vision and leadership of the church. You could have a primarily congregationally-led church say, well, look, we don't want a pastor coming in telling us what to do, so most of the decisions will be made as a group in the congregation. Or you could have a church that's primarily run by the denomination, that there is a bishop or some person outside of the church that is really the ultimate say-so for the church. But the question how you're going to really define the office of the pastor and what role the pastor is going to have in the church is going to be really important. Another significant role in the church is the role of deacon. And deacons, while in the New Testament it seems clear to me that deacons serve, it seems that the first deacon ministry, Acts chapter 6, was deacons serving widows. In some churches, deacons basically function with the pastor to give like oversight and administration. I think the more biblical model for deacons is if they're really laser-focused on practical ministry. I think elders, pastors lead, and deacons serve. But again, you'll have to work that out in your context. And then in regard to church membership, some churches have no church membership. I think that's wrong-headed. It seems that the early church clearly knew who was in the church and who was without of the church, who was within, who was without. But the question of church membership, if you affirm it, which I think you should, is do you have low-commitment church membership or high-commitment church members? I think that we are seeing that many churches are really elevating their membership requirements. I think that's a great thing, that they are trying to not place some legalistic burden on members. That's not what I'm saying. But to say, look, you're part of this church. You're a member of this church. You now need to serve. You now need to pray for the church. You now need to give to the church. You are a part of the church. You also have responsibility in the church. And so it's not good, in my opinion, to just have qualifications for pastors and specific roles for pastors and qualifications for deacons and specific roles for deacons. I think it's also important to have important qualifications for members and to call the entire church into ministry. We're still answering the question, what is a church and how you're going to organize? We've got some other areas that we need to think about. What about preaching and teaching? What is your style? How are you going to preach and teach to the church? Are you going to primarily preach through books? Are you going to preach to felt needs? Are you going to try to employ some type of an eclectic style? You as a pastor need to have a genuine, well-thought-out philosophy of preaching, because in many ways, when the church assembles every Sunday to worship, the number one thing they're going to see the pastor doing is preaching. And so if the pastor doesn't have a well-worked philosophy of preaching and is not well-prepared for preaching, then he will miss a major opportunity to minister to the congregation and to teach the Bible. So you'll need to think through, what is your strategy for preaching? Why do you embrace an expository style? Why do you embrace a topical style? Or why do you embrace an eclectic or even a lectionary style, doing some type of lectionary preaching? Whatever your style, you need to think through it and then be able to justify why you think that this is appropriate for preaching in the context of a church. One area that can be overlooked is the area of fellowship. And honestly, I don't think it should be overlooked at all. The early church in Acts 2 says that they continued steadfastly in the apostles' teaching and in fellowship. Fellowship is a big part of what churches do. They get together. We do life together. Fellowship is not just having a meal together, although it certainly could be having a meal together, but it is this wonderful community that bubbles up that should organically happen. But a church should have fellowship. So the question is, how are you going to encourage fellowship in the life of the church? Are you going to say, well, we're just going to have organic fellowship? Well, what does that mean? You're just hoping that the church members are going to hang out together? Maybe they already do. Maybe they're already in a community where they interact. That's okay. But are you going to try to encourage fellowship? Could you plan some fellowship opportunities? That could be, something that you could do. Or are you going to like try to program into the life of the church, like fellowship? Like, are you going to have meals and make space within your small groups for fellowship and Bible study? You really need to think through what you're going to do to encourage fellowship in a church. When the church gathers to worship, there does need to be a philosophy of worship. Why are you doing what you're doing? And series of questions are going to need to be asked and answered about worship. For example, is your worship service primarily focused on accommodation of non-believers? Are you really keeping an eye out for non-believers? Or is your worship service primarily going to be focused on the building up of believers? Now, I think a lot of people say, well, we want to do it all. We want to be welcoming to non-believers and build up believers. And I understand that. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. But the truth is, you're either going to tilt that worship service more to building up believers or more to the accommodation of non-believers. And you just kind of need to think through and have a theological rationale for which one of those you're going to do. And then as far as corporate worship, what are the major aspects that will be part of corporate worship? For example, most people think that praying is central to Christianity, because it is. But how frequent are you going to pray in worship, and why do you pray the way that you do in worship? Or what about giving? What role does giving have in worship? Or the ordinances of the church? When are you going to do baptism, and how will baptism be celebrated? What about the Lord's Supper? How often are you going to do the Lord's Supper? And then, you know, preaching. How prominent is preaching in the service, and how long are you going to preach? Are you going to do just an hour-long worship service, or are you committed to longer? And then music. You know, what type of style of music are you going to employ? Are there some key ideas about what type of music will be sung? The philosophy of worship music. You got to think through all of that when you are organizing corporate worship. Again, this idea that we're just going to have a church and church is going to be for everybody. But as soon as you start saying, no, we're going to sing in this way, we're going to preach in this way, we're going to give in this way, we're going to do the Lord's Supper in this way, we're going to baptize in this way, we're going to pray like this, well, then honestly, you're starting to locate yourself more closely aligned with a denomination, a tradition within the church. And my use of tradition there doesn't mean bad. I think most people who say they do worship a certain way, they say, well, we're doing so out of hopefully theological convictions. Then what about prayer? The church prays. Does the church pray outside of the few spoken prayers in the corporate worship service? Do you have a regularly scheduled time for corporate prayer? Do you have like a midweek prayer service? Many churches have gone away from the midweek prayer service, but is that a good thing? Or do you say, well, we're not going to do a midweek prayer service, but we are going to call the church together for specific times for corporate prayer? Well, that would be good. Or you say, you know, prayer is going to be dispersed throughout our ministries. I certainly do hope that prayer is dispersed throughout your ministries, but is that going to be enough to have an intentional focus on praying? Then what about sharing the gospel? How are you going to do evangelism? How are you going to share your faith? Are you going to do a planned evangelistic program? I think we've seen in many churches that the planned evangelistic programs felt too canned and stilted, and many churches don't do them well like they did 15 years ago. But in place of the planned evangelistic plan, I certainly do think your churches need to be taught an evangelistic approach. You need to be taught how to share the gospel, and the church member needs genuine confidence that they know how to share the gospel with someone. So if you're not going to do a planned program, you at least need a taught evangelistic approach. Or some churches say, no, we're going to do no formal evangelistic program. We're just going to hope that folks build relationships and share the gospel. And certainly I'm all for relational evangelism, but we got to move from the relationship at some point to actually share the gospel. You know, a church makes disciples. That's what we do. I mean, if a church isn't making disciples of Jesus Christ, then something has gone fundamentally amiss in the church. But then the question becomes, what type of disciple-making plan are you going to embrace? Are you going to embrace like an educational model that we're going to teach people the core doctrines of the faith, and that's primarily how we're going to do discipleship? Or you're going to do a relational model? You're going to say, no, we're just going to not do like classroom style education. We're going to do like one-on-one mentorship. Well, that's good. Are you going to do a developmental model where you say, well, we need to figure out where you are? If a person has walked with the Lord for 50 years, well, then they probably don't need to go to like a new beginner's class. So you need to kind of figure out where they are in their spiritual development and then engage them precisely at that point. So more of a tailored discipleship making model. Or you say, you know, discipleship really shows up in a person's life. It shows up in how they share the gospel. It shows up in their ministry. So we want a more action-oriented disciple making model and not one where people just sit and sit and sit and sit and learn and learn and talk and talk and talk. We want them up. We want them out. We want them serving. I think there's some truth in all of these, but a church must have a clear-eyed vision on disciple making. And if a church doesn't have a clear-eyed plan on disciple making, then likely if disciples are being made, it may be more by accident than on purpose. One of the major issues in a church is congregational care. The church always has needs, and then there ought to be clarity on who's responsible for congregational care. Is congregational care primarily a pastoral responsibility? Is it primarily a deacon responsibility, or is it primarily groups responsibility, like small groups or Sunday school classes? You know, in most churches, when a person is down and out, they're going to want to see some type of pastoral staff show up, and I think that's reasonable. But as a church grows, and especially if the staff isn't growing alongside the church, then congregational care has to be dispersed. And in some ways, deacon ministry has a certain level of congregational care that is theirs by virtue of their office. And then I also think that the congregation should have some responsibility. Again, high commitment church membership should have some responsibility in congregational care. But again, you need a really clear, thoughtful plan on how will the congregation be taken care of. Some other things that you need to think through is what is going to be the role of programming in your church. Do you want to be a very program church? You want a lot of programs. You want children's ministries and youth ministries and men's ministries and women's ministries and couples ministries and senior adult ministries. In some ways, the culture demands, whether that's right or wrong, the culture demands that there be something for everybody. And that means like something that meets the needs of a particular niche. If you agree with that and lean into that, you're going to have a very program church. The problem with program church is the church can just take up people's time to the uttermost. I mean, there's a program happening all the time. It takes a lot of volunteers. It takes a lot of budget to do that. So you can say, no, we don't want to be so programmed. We want to be moderately or low programmed. Well, that's nice, but that is not going to eliminate how are you going to meet the needs of your congregation? How are you going to make disciples? How are you going to encourage them to share their faith? How are you going to engage them in fellowship? And programs done well can encourage that, but programs done poorly can quite frankly, hinder that. Also got to make a decision on how you're going to engage the community. There are a lot of ways to engage the community. You can engage your community through some type of event-based model that you're going to be out in your community doing things, events, attractional events. You could engage your community through community-based programs. You could engage the community through organic relationships. You could engage the community through Mercy Ministries, or you could engage the church through parachurch partnerships. Say, we're going to just team up with other outside organizations, parachurch partnerships, or even just other nonprofits in the area. But again, you can't say we're going to be a church that engages the community. Well, the question is how? And you say, well, we're going to engage the community in every way. That's again, noble. It's I like your heart if that's what you think. But the truth is, a church in need of revitalization has limited resources. You're going to have to kind of decide, I'm going to engage my community in this way, at least for this season, to move things forward in revitalization. A few other areas that we need to talk about, mission involvement. I'm afraid that if you do revitalization and only focus on your church, that can become something you want to be careful on. Now, I'm sympathetic. You're going to need for a while to focus on your church, because if you don't, your church might cease to exist. But you also need a vision for mission outside of your church. And so the question is, how are you going to think about mission involvement? Are you going to engage the church in a mission trip, short-term mission trip? Are you going to encourage the church to give a percentage of their budget to international missions? Are you going to primarily pray and do education to say, look, God's got a global work? Or are you going to say, we're going to do no mission involvement? I think that would be wrongheaded to have no mission involvement. But if you're going to be missionally involved, the question is how. Then your budget. In so many ways, we can have a lot of platitudes, but the church budget tells a lot about the priorities of the church. And if you don't pay attention, staff and the church building can eat up all the money for the church budget and leave very little money for direct money for ministry and for money for international missions. So you, the church revitalizer, are going to have limited resources. You're probably going to need more staff. You're probably going to need many building issues that need to be addressed. But at least several times a year, you need to just look at that budget hard and say, you know, how much money are we spending just on personnel? How much money are we spending to keep our building intact? And then how much of those take up a percentage of our budget versus ministries that we can do directly in the community and missions? What I've come to find out is many churches in need of revitalization, virtually their entire budget is personnel and facilities. I'm sympathetic. You must pay personnel adequately. You must keep up your building. But you need to be wise when you're doing the funding strategy that staff, building, ministries, and missions get a fair percentage so that the mission can really happen. And then this brings us to the last issue. I kind of left it to the last issue because we say the church is not a building, it's a people, and that's true. But most churches do have buildings. And a lot of churches in need of revitalization have a building in need of a lot of work. And so you have to kind of decide on the front end, how important is the building to you? If you've inherited a building, then you're probably going to have to fix the building. And you're going to have to balance a lot of things. There's going to be likely a small pool of resources. You need to going to come up with a vision for what you want to do. And then you'll have to decide, do I fund ministries? Do I fix the building? How does all of that work together? And one of the big things you'll need to think about is, how important is a building in the church revitalization strategy? Clarifying your convictions about what a church is going to limit and delimit what you're going to produce on the other side of a revitalization. Because you'll have to say, I identify with this denomination. I identify with this doctrinal statement. I think the role of the pastor is this. I think the role of the deacon is this. I believe membership requires, church membership requires this level of commitment. I think preaching and teaching primarily should be done this way. This is how we're going to do fellowship. These are the key aspects of corporate worship. This is the role of prayer in the church. This is how we approach evangelism. This is the strategy for discipleship. This is who takes care of the congregation, and here are the roles that we play. This is how I feel about ministry programming and its role in the wider discipleship process. This is how we're going to engage the community. This is how we're going to engage missions and the nations. This is how much we're willing to spend on each one of these areas in our budget. And this is how we feel about the importance of the building and the overall revitalization strategy. When you make decisions in these areas, you are now clarifying the type of church you want to become. You're actually saying these are the practical things that I am going to do. These are the convictions that I have because I believe this type of church is a faithful witness to the person of Jesus and is a faithful witness to the instruction of the New Testament as it identifies the perimeters of the church. Think carefully about these issues, because once you decide on these issues, once you set these perimeters, then you've necessarily decided, even before you've started the revitalization, what is allowable in the church now that you are going to revitalize.
Thank you for listening to the Rusty Small Podcast. We would love to hear from you. For contact information and more resources, visit rustysmall.com.